Support for this public radio podcast comes from KeyBank, focused knowledge, customized solutions, and the resources of an entire bank. Because the best solutions fit around a business's needs. More at key.com/corporate. Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Next time you're out and about in your city, look around. Ever wonder just how old that road is or what kind of patina the sewer pipes might have by now? We talk a lot these days about the aging of America. Well, that goes double and triple for much of the country's infrastructure. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the American Public Transportation Association, representing America's public transportation industry, delivering 10 billion riders annually, and working for an energy-independent America. PublicTransportation.org. And by Reuters, delivering news and information that reaches over a billion people every day. Before it's news, it's Reuters.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Tess Vigeland in for Kai Rizdahl. Glad to have you with us on this Thursday, the 19th day of July. Here's today's magic number, 83. That's the age of the steam pipe that exploded yesterday in Midtown Manhattan. It caused panic in the city, shut down streets, disrupted subway service and businesses. And it reminded New Yorkers and the rest of us how vulnerable our aging infrastructure may be. Marketplace's Elisa Roth reports.
The miles of steam pipes underneath the city streets are just one part of New York City's geriatric infrastructure, an infrastructure that's increasingly causing trouble for the Big Apple. But New York's not the only one. The pipes and tunnels in cities like Boston and Chicago are just as old and just as precarious. Preston Niblack is deputy director of the New York City Independent Budget Office. He says cities know they have to deal with equipment as it ages, but too often they don't.
It's tempting to defer actually maintaining things. And so that means that sometimes you actually end up with very old infrastructure that you're only partially using or you're relying on infrastructure that really should be replaced.
Niblack says older cities have to decide whether to ignore, upgrade, or simply replace ailing systems. Newer technologies like cable and telephone make things worse. They add to the stress on old systems because they're all sharing limited underground space. Danielle Seitz follows the energy industry for the investment bank Dahlman Rose. She says cities might balk at the high cost of repairing and maintaining underground structures. And when they do upgrade those systems, she says they need to think beyond the quick fix.
When you are upgrading, you have to think of the potential expansion, the requirement for the next 50 years.
But with so much work to be done, cities and companies will have to pick where to put their money. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Harley Davidson, the company behind one of America's most famous brands, unveiled its latest profit figures today. Sales of the iconic motorcycle are roaring ahead overseas, but here in the U.S., they've slipped into reverse. Why? Well, donning his leathers in London? Stephen Beard tries to find out.
Get your motor running. Head out on the highway.
The boys who saw the movie Easy Rider and lusted after the machine are middle-aged now, and at last they have the money to live their adolescent dreams. That's why Harley-Davidson's profits jumped 19% in the last quarter, says fund manager and biker Justin Urquhart-Stewart.
This is the baby boomers searching for their long-lost youth have been buying high-quality, expensive bikes. Not just Harleys, but Harleys, of course, are seen as a particular symbol.
Dozens of Harley dealerships have opened in Europe in recent years to feed the nostalgia boom. But while Harley's sales rose almost 13% here in the last quarter, they fell 5% in the US. David Brown, biker and former Marketplace host, says the nostalgia boom's gone too far in America. The Harleys attracted the wrong sort of crowd.
An inordinate number of doctors and accountants and lawyers are putting on fringe leather and a bandana and pretending to be Peter Fonda every weekend.
The ultimate symbol of the open road has lost its street cred, he says.
For people who are passionate about motorcycles, That whole faux Easy Rider thing, it just doesn't wash anymore.
Not on Harley's home turf, perhaps, but here in Europe, where the very idea of an open road is itself a fantasy, the Harley dream is kicking into a higher gear. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Harley wasn't the only well-known American brand with earnings news today. Hershey has apparently been in something of a meltdown. Profits over the last 3 months tumbled 96% compared with last year. The company is now busy cooking up a way to fix its main milk chocolate business and expand into Cadbury and Godiva territory. Jill Barchet reports.
Hershey still sells more chocolate than anyone else in the U.S., but the company isn't keeping up with changing tastes. Mitchell Corwin is an equity analyst at Morningstar.
There's sort of a shift from regular milk chocolate to dark chocolate. So in order for Hershey to keep growing, they have to be in dark chocolate. They have to have that market.
Hershey's recently purchased high-end chocolatiers Scharfenberger and Joseph Schmidt. The premium market is growing at double digits. Hershey's expects it to hit $2.5 billion in the next 5 years, and the company wants a piece. Bernard Passiniak is editor-in-chief of Candy Industry magazine. He says the problem is Hershey's own name.
Hershey is not regarded, in terms of the Hershey bar, as a premium chocolate. As a result, it's hard to get a premium price for a brand that's not considered a premium gourmet chocolate.
Hershey's has been working hard to change its image. It's spending heavily on ads. That's one of the big reasons that profits are down. Hershey's New York store was buzzing today. But not everyone nearby is a Hershey's fan.
I really don't like Hershey's at all. It just leaves this horrible aftertaste in your mouth. It just doesn't even taste like chocolate.
Passiniak says that's the kind of reaction foreigners have to Hershey's chocolate, too. That's a problem for Hershey's, which wants to expand into China and India. Hershey's announced today that it would use another well-known brand name, Starbucks. Beginning in 2008, Hershey's will make artisanal Starbucks brand chocolates for grocery stores and drugstores around the country. In New York, I'm Jill Barchet for Marketplace.
Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke was back before Congress today, calling the recent subprime mortgage losses mere bumps along the road of market innovation. Apparently, Wall Street was listening because those subprime jitters we've been talking so much about, yeah, those were gone. In their place, cheers for the first final bell with the Dow over 14,000. We'll have details when we do the numbers. If you've been living under a rock for the last week, you might not have heard. The Beverly Hills Beckhams are here in Los Angeles. Soccer superstar David Beckham and his oh-so-fashionable wife Victoria, a.k.a. Posh Spice, hit U.S. soil a week ago. Number 23 is slated to play his first game for the Los Angeles Galaxy on Saturday night, assuming he's not still limping around on a swollen ankle. Our Business with Sports commentator Ed Dursey has joined us on the pitch to talk all things Beckham. Hey, Ed.
Hi, Tess. Good to see you.
I understand you're going to the game yourself on Saturday.
I am. As a Galaxy season ticket holder, I will be there.
Let's talk about this hype. It's been Major League itself. Isn't the big question, what will Beckham do for soccer as a whole in the U.S.? Is he really worth this kind of money?
Well, let's talk about whether he's worth it. First of all, his base salary is about $6.25 million. That's a little bit more than Luke Walton makes in order to play for the Lakers. And in terms of the sort of profile of these comparative players, I think Beckham
just a little higher.
Look, we've heard this 5-year, $250 million
right.
deal. That really is based on revenue participation from jersey sales and the like. So yes, he will make a lot of money, but his base salary in terms of the risk, you know, isn't really that big. And as for the second, look, soccer's already big. The finals of the Gold Cup, in which the USA beat Mexico, drew 45% more television viewers than the NHL Stanley Cup final. So soccer's big in this country. Whether Major League Soccer will become one of the big four or big five, as everybody likes to measure it, that remains.
And as the league has been promising for the last 10 years.
Exactly, but it's only 10 years old. You know, it's in an expansion and a growth mode. They announced the formation of a new franchise in San Jose yesterday. Mm-hmm. And if you look at this in terms of stock, This is a growth stock with some pretty good fundamentals on which to stand.
All right, what about the Galaxy?
Well, as long as he stays healthy, the Galaxy, in fact, the Galaxy have already made their money back. Mm. They have sold doubled or more than doubled season ticket sales. The stadiums will be full for the rest of the season. But more importantly, the Galaxy have completely revised their business model. They now are trying to become a global brand the same way Manchester United or Real Madrid are global brands. Now they can take this brand out to Asia, play friendly matches, sell a lot of jerseys, raise their sponsorship. They sold a jersey sponsorship to Herbalife, which is $20 million for 4 years, pretty much unheard of. And recently it was rumored that someone made an offer of $100 million to buy the Galaxy. When you compare that to DC United recently being sold for $33 million, you sort of see that it's on the uptick.
You mentioned the caveat that he stays healthy. And, you know, they're really just banking on this one guy. And you look back to, say, the heyday of the NBA. Michael Jordan was the NBA. But at the same time, you also had Magic and you had Pippen and you had Stockton and Malone. Those leagues weren't counting on one person.
The question is whether he will actually, you know, make it mass popularity. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's a risk. He's injured right now. In fact, he very well may not play on Saturday night, much to many people's disappointment, including my own. But the fundamentals of the league are much stronger than David Beckham, and the fundamentals of the Galaxy are stronger than David Beckham. But this could be the thing that takes Major League Soccer from being an emerging league to a league that is popular to the casual spectator.
And so the question is the fan base greater than David Beckham?
Well, certainly it has become a little bit greater, because the season tickets that I've owned for the last 10 years or so, you know, that have been my season tickets, are now referred to by my wife as our season tickets.
And hopefully you'll be sitting somewhere near Tom Cat.
Well, you know, certainly in the celebrity section, and hopefully we'll get a few peeks.
Excellent. Well, we'll look forward to hearing about that. Ed Dursey is Vice President of Interactive Media at Fox Sports International. But when he appears on Marketplace, his views are his own. Thanks for coming in. Enjoy the game.
Thank you, Tess.
Ready for a new low-cost airline? Today, Virgin America Airlines started selling tickets. Flights don't start until next month, but when they do, the new carrier will offer rides from San Francisco to New York, Los Angeles, Vegas, and Washington. Virgin is entering a crowded and competitive market where even a low-cost stalwart like Southwest is raising fares. But if it focuses on customer service, some analysts say Virgin America might take off. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler has the details.
Virgin America may be able to take advantage of consumer discontent. According to Forrester Research, only about a third of business travelers are loyal to any particular airline.
When the IRS comes in as doing a better job with customer satisfaction than the airline industry, you know something is very wrong.
That's Forrester's airline analyst Henry Hartefelt. He says consumers may be attracted to Virgin America's amenities. Economy class seats come with live TV and a standard electrical outlet so you can plug in your computer. What you won't get is any sort of tie-in with Virgin Atlantic. Aviation analyst Richard Abulafia with the Teal Group says Virgin America had to limit foreign ownership in order to get the business to fly with regulators.
For years, there have been insurmountable barriers to foreign carriers entering the U.S. domestic airline market. But what you've got is a foreign airline basically setting up a brand subsidiary, if you will, one that they only have part ownership in, yet one that bears their brand and logo.
The Virgin America brand isn't making the best first impression. Tickets between Los Angeles and San Francisco may only cost $44 one way, but Forrester analyst Henry Hartefelt says consumers are having trouble buying them over the internet.
It announces it's going to start selling tickets. It offers very attractive fares, and then the website crashes under the weight of the traffic. That's just inexcusable.
But Hartefelt is still giving Virgin America a try. He managed to buy a ticket to New York for Labor Day. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Coming up, carrying letters and building community in modern Beijing.
Is that true that in America, the people live separately and never care about their neighbors?
No, that's not true. But first, let's do the numbers. For the first time in its 111-year history, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed over 14,000 today by a hair. The blue chip index ended trading at 14,000.41, to be exact. That was a gain of 82 points, more than 0.5%. Uplifting profit news in the tech sector helped boost the NASDAQ, which advanced 20 points, 0.75%, to finish at 2720. The S&P 500 picked up 6 points, almost 0.5%, to wrap up at 1553. IBM could have stood for in the big money today. The information technology giant reported its strongest performance in 5 years. Stock rose more than 4%. Bond prices were higher, pushing the yield on the 10-year T-note down to 5.01%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by American Public Media's weekly program, Speaking of Faith. Starting July 19th, Krista Tippett explores the ethics of eating with author Barbara Kingsolver, speakingoffaith.org. Want to hear something on Marketplace again? Help is as near as your home computer. To find audio archives of past programs and additional special features, just go to the internet and log on to our website. The information you need when you need it is only a few clicks away. Just head over to marketplace.org.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a glance at what's coming up Friday. In Washington, the International Organization for Migration discusses the displacement crisis in Iraq. According to their website, Iraq now has about 2.2 million internally displaced people, with another 2 million having fled to neighboring countries. A Senate committee takes up the issue of youth violence and the effectiveness of mentoring children. And musician Carlos Santana celebrates a milestone birthday. He'll be 60. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace. I'm Tess Vigeland in for Kai Rizdal. The war in Iraq, healthcare, the environment, they're already big on the agenda as we move into presidential election season. But some Democrats are shining a light on another topic, poverty. John Edwards wrapped up his tour of impoverished communities this week, and Barack Obama unveiled his plan to combat urban poverty. Commentator Angela Glover-Blackwell says the attention is valuable, but politicians still have a long way to go.
Finally, a couple of presidential candidates are talking about poverty, and the American people are wondering what took them so long. More than three-quarters of all Americans support housing, minimum wage, child care, and tax policies that reduce poverty, according to a recent Pew report. Politicians would kill for approval ratings that high. But for years, the constant chase for middle-class votes has blinded politicians. They've ignored growing poverty in America. Since President Bush entered the White House, 5 million more people have fallen into poverty. 1 in 8 Americans now lives below the poverty line. 1 in 8. But the face of poverty is changing. For the first time, more poor people live in suburbs than cities. Every day, more Americans realize that poverty affects their neighbors, their co-workers, their children's classmates. Remember suburban soccer moms, those much-desired swing voters in the 2000 election? Well, many of them are now struggling to make the payments on their minivans and driving to low-paying jobs, not the country club. On top of the 37 million Americans living in poverty, another 50 million are one illness, one layoff, one stroke of bad luck away from becoming poor. Staying out of poverty worries a huge segment of the population. Yet experts say that poverty can be nearly eliminated in a generation. How? Keep boosting the minimum wage, provide better child care assistance, and expand the child and earned income tax credits. Provide more affordable housing in neighborhoods with good schools and opportunity. And build stronger public transit systems that connect low-income workers to job centers. Good-paying jobs and basic economic security will allow poor people to save and invest, the most reliable long-term tickets out of poverty. The politicians seem to be waiting until more of the would-be middle class slips into poverty to act. But the American people are more than willing to take this issue on now. The politicians need to catch up and then lead the way.
Angela Glover-Blackwell is founder and CEO of PolicyLink. Your thoughts? Go to marketplace.org and click on Contact.
Thank you.
time again for Working, our monthly profile of workers around the world. So the guy from your mailroom drops an express mail package from China on your desk. It got there overnight. Big deal, right? Actually, yes. Worldwide delivery is a $130 billion business with more than a million workers. Today, we meet one humble link in the vast delivery chain. Our Working profile is produced with Homelands Productions. Sandy Tolan introduces us to Mr. Wong, Chinese courier.
Every morning, Lao Wong climbs a ladder to the tin roof of his simple brick home.
This is 小哥的，你看。
Then he opens the door to a small cage, crouches low, and begins shooing out his birds.
When I wake up every morning, the first thing I do is release my pigeons. It signals to the birds that they can fly now, high up to the sky.
Mr. Wong's birds fly together, joining other flocks whose keepers, just for the pleasure of the sound, have adorned them with bamboo whistles. Now Mr. Wong watches his rise in ever higher circles above his ancient Beijing neighborhood called a hutong.
I always feel that I like to live in a hutong rather than a modern apartment building. Because in an apartment building, nobody knows you and will talk to you, even the neighbors.
From this rooftop, Mr. Wong looks upon the waves of tiled roofs, low-slung buildings clustered together, armies of cyclists navigating narrow alleys, vendors calling out over walls of ancient courtyards. But the place is not so insular as it seems.
I'm a postman for EMS, Chinese Express Mail.
Every Monday through Friday, Lao Wong gets on his bicycle and rides out of his beloved hutong into the wall of sound known as modern Beijing.
Seven, eight, nine.
It's mid-afternoon now, and Mr. Wong is sifting through a leaning tower of packages, mostly documents.
17, 18, 19.
He's a carrier pigeon for the 21st century. Mr. Wong's work is all about carrying messages. These ones in tightly wrapped packages, bound from Beijing to more than 100 countries.
USA, Hong Kong, France.
Now, does Mr. Wong ever wonder what's in these packages, where they're going, why, and what's the big rush?
No, I never think about that.
Mr. Wong shifts into gear now, easing his green express mail van into the flotsam of Beijing traffic, a speck in a vast river of commerce.
Just look at the cars on the roads of Beijing. But everybody's eager to come to live in Beijing.
The fact is, he's like a lot of us. Dare I say hundreds of millions of us around the world. Mr. Wong works to live. He doesn't want to know more about the 250,000 or more packages he's picked up in the last dozen years. Those urgent documents, factory samples, or packages that must be there the next day. For Mr. Wong, it's just a job.
Yeah.
I just want to make some money.
And so Mr. Wong makes his rounds from a little corner of Beijing his company has carved up for him. He designs his own routes and picks up 100, sometimes 200 packages a day.
Could you please tell the sender of this mail he didn't package it in the right way, and now we have to redo it?
And if he's thinking not so much about the destination of the packages, he is thinking how far they might take his young daughter.
Bye-bye. All done for today. I'm leaving. See you next Monday. Bye-bye.
And now, the van parked at the post office, Mr. Wong pedals back in time with one little stop along the way.
I like KFC better, Chinese food.
And that is Wong Zheng, Mr. Wong's only child, the driving force of his labors. Shy and round-faced, Wong Zheng is 12. She's in pigtails and pink sneakers, waiting in line at the KFC to order her nuggets. Mr. Wong stands beside her, beaming as she tries out her English. She prefers KFC over Chinese food, though she says it's not her favorite.
I like McDonald's better.
Every time Mr. Wong takes Wang Zheng here, on his salary of $55 a week, it's going to cost him half a day's pay. And that's just for the chicken. Wang Zheng's tastes run to shiny things, like CDs of Chinese pop stars. Things her dad never could have imagined back in the days of the Cultural Revolution.
Because, you know, now the children spend more than the adults.
Sometimes when they come here with Wang Zheng's mom and grandma, Mr. Wong will just wait outside, smoking a cigarette. He says he feels out of place here. He looks oddly at his fries, then at me. He has a question.
Is that true that in America, the people live separately and never care about their neighbors?
Because that's starting to happen here, Mr. Wong says. Hutongs are falling before the wrecking ball, and he no longer knows all his neighbors. In fact, these days, Mr. Wong lives only part-time in the Hutong. The family sleeps in a modern apartment across town, so Wang Zheng can have her own room, chat with her friends online, and get a competitive edge in her studies. Nowadays, Mr. Wong says, it's all about getting ahead. Why else would he spend so much time hauling packages through traffic? Next morning, Mr. Wong is back at the pigeon coop in his old hutong, ready for another day in the express mail van. He's already fed his birds and released them. Now, he's calling them home. In Beijing, I'm Sandy Tolan for Marketplace.
Our story was co-produced by Lo Lee with help from Elizabeth Chur. For more information on the series and photos, visit marketplace.org. Just click on the link that says Working.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, where a mix of large U.S. companies can strengthen your portfolio. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication.
And this final note, reports of a merger linking Pepsi and Nestle might have you thinking, two peas in a sugary pod. Well, so much for the Nestea plunge. Turns out the deal fizzled because Nestle thinks the soda company is too focused on junky snacks. That's according to a story in the Wall Street Journal today. Pepsi owns several other brands, including Frito-Lay, Tropicana, and Gatorade. News of the non-merger bumped up Nestle's shares by about 2%. I always knew Kit Kats weren't junk food. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow shot up 82 points, 0.5%, closing just a fraction over the 14,000 mark for the first time. The NASDAQ rose 80 points, 0.75%. The S&P gained 6 points, nearly 0.5%. Our editors include John Buckley, Patty Hirsch, Margaret Koval, Karen Lowe, and Lisa Tucker. Next time, writers court audiences with more than words.
That party had to cost like $60,000 or more, I would think. It was packed. And then also, I don't know who pays to put the red carpet out in front. You have to rent a red carpet.
I'm Tess Vigeland. Hope you'll join us again tomorrow.
American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.